This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and a good happy Sunday morning. What? Is this even allowed? Welcome to Phillies Therapy, ladies, gentlemen, fanatics of all ages. We're getting ever so close. Can you feel it? The change in the air, the change in the leaves. It's getting a little breezy. The temperatures are starting with a 5 in the morning. Fall is around the corner. And guess who's playing better now that the Braves are out of town? Only have to worry about them for 3 more games. Yes, the Phillies couldn't prevent the Braves from celebrating another clinch on their home turf. That seems to happen every other year, almost literally, which is annoying. Hope everybody gave themselves a day to work through that and get over it, like I did. Now they're back on the warpath, they're really just taking it out on the St. Louis Cardinals. The Phillies have re-separated themselves a bit from the pack in the NL wildcard. Their magic number to clinch the spot is 11 with 14 games to go. Wildcard math can get a little fuzzy with that, but we think that's right. 11-9 in their last 20, 16-14 in their last 30. Just that little bit above 500 that they like to do so much, ever so consistently. 81-67, making their way to the playoffs, making their way to the top seed in the wildcard. Matt, it's nice to see the team play like they have the last 2 days, Friday and Saturday, because we're recording early Sunday, to sort of right the ship after not really being able to salvage a whole lot of pride, I guess I was calling it, at the end of the Braves series last week. So this has been nice to see, huh?
Yeah, I actually thought Friday was like their worst win of the season, if that makes any sense.
I was so ugly.
I mean, really, it was probably the worst. I think it was the worst they've played in weeks, maybe months. I mean, just the mistakes, just the lack of strike throwing, you know, the mistakes in the field. But they won. And, you know, maybe that's a more testament to the Cardinals, who are, you know, just kind of sputtering to the end here, although they had played better before the Phillies went to St. Louis. So win's a win. And like, as we've seen right now in the National League, it's hard for some of these teams to get wins. And, you know, the Phillies are in a great position, and it's a lot of what they're doing, but a lot of what everyone else is doing. And that is just not winning consistently. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think they essentially locked up a playoff spot this weekend, I think, and they're well on their way to getting that home field before the final weekend, which is going to be key.
Yeah, I guess I made it sound like they were coming back and just whooping up on the Cardinals. That clearly hasn't been the case. Saturday was nice. Friday, you're absolutely correct. It was harrowing. I was afraid at multiple times during that game. But yeah, the Phillies, look, they've always been in a good position. Even when they lost 3 of 4 to the Braves, they were still fine because the rest of this wildcard group has nobody that's breaking away. It's a peloton of sorts, right? We have 4 teams now who are within 1 game of each other for as high as the second spot. So it's 4 teams for 2 spots. And then you have the Giants, who are lingering, of course, 2.5 back. Cubs at 78-71 currently hold the second spot. Phillies are 3.5 clear of them. They're in a really, really good position. They hold the tiebreak. So, great. Awesome. It's effectively an extra game. The Diamondbacks and Reds are tied at 78-72 for that third spot. I don't have the tiebreakers for them ahead of me, right in front of me. And then the Marlins are a half game back of the D-backs and Reds. It's just a mishmash. And right now, as we sit here today, we have no idea who the Phillies could play. None. It could be any one of those 4 teams. It could be anybody. It could be absolutely anybody. The Brewers are putting some distance in between themselves and the Cubs to lock up the Central, so you figure they're going to be the third seed. and take on the lower wild card. That leaves the Phillies to
Brewers
take on.
Brewers are dangerous.
Yes, they are. Yeah, we've talked about this. Like, they need to look out
Brewers, Dodgers, NLDS, if the seeds hold. I think that's a series of Brewers win right now.
The pitching could carry. Just watch out for the Brewers. Watch out for the Brewers. But as far as our team is concerned, the Cubs, D-backs, Reds, Marlins, there are four teams. And then the Giants, I guess, if
we're not going to count the Giants. Or
all right.
They got swept in a doubleheader by the Rockies. Yeah, they're not allowed to be counted.
Yeah, that's Giants. I can't believe they're still technically in this. All right. So we have four teams that we're going to think about right now as potential first round National League Division Series opponents. We get to do a little prognosticating and a little feeling through of what's going on here. We don't know exactly who it's going to be. We don't really have a better feel of, you know, one team ahead of the other. The Cubs, you would think, are the better team of that group of four. But, you know, again, they're only a half game up. They lost a couple games to the D-backs in their series, a really big series out there so far. Just nobody's really breaking through here. And so, Matt, I think what we should do is to take an early look, a little gauge of temperature, as to how we feel about these four teams as potential opponents in a quick, brief, best of three National League Division Series that we hope, the Phillies are hosting. So let's do a little ranking exercise. Let's think about these four teams, go in reverse, start at the team we are least concerned about. Again, it's a best of three, so anything could happen. And the Phillies could lose to any of these teams, just as they could beat any of these teams. We know I'm not going to beat it to death today. But let's think about these four teams as just a pure matchup situation, how we feel about each of them going into a potential best of three series. I would defer, if you would like to kick us off and tell us who you're, I guess, least concerned would probably be the right term, but who you think the Phillies match up best with in a first round best of three National League Division Series out of the Cubs, D-backs, Reds, and Marlins.
I'll start with the Reds. I don't know who's pitching for the Reds in a three game series. I mean, Ben Lively might start one of those games.
You think he would start one of those games?
I don't know.
Wouldn't that be something?
Andrew Abbott, who's lefty.
Yes.
Hunter Green, who's pitching decently since coming back from extended absence.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess, you know, if it gets to a game three, you know, obviously for both teams, it's probably just throw everything against the wall and see what sticks. Now, the Reds have a fantastic shutdown closer at the back, Alexis Diaz. Not a lot in the bullpen. They have some guys they've really leaned on. They're obviously young. They're athletic. They could probably steal some bags. They hit home runs, but I don't know. I just think out of all these teams, like there's a lot of younger players in this team that haven't played in a postseason atmosphere before. You stick them in Citizens Bank Park, especially the pitching, and I think this is the best matchup.
It's so key, I think, and why we keep coming back to talking about this Phillies team hosting this series, and why that it's kind of a big deal. It's not the end all be all if they don't end up hosting this series. It would be annoying if they lost their grip on the spot that they've had, you know, for weeks and weeks at this point. Ended up having.
I would say it's pretty important. I don't think it's the end all be all right now, but I think it's rather important, especially where they're at. I mean, if they cannot get this four seed, then I don't know, something has gone horribly wrong here.
Right. And you know, that's a different bridge to cross.
And then you'd be right. Yeah, I mean, you'd almost be backing into the playoffs, which is not the dynamic you want.
No. It would be a flip of the script from the way we're currently talking about things. But you have to think right now that the Phillies are riding this wave of, you know, reputation of being a real, you know, bitch of a team to have to face in Philadelphia in the playoffs, right?
And like, I don't think it's just a reputation, right? I mean, I think it's a real thing, don't you?
Oh, sure.
Yeah
absolutely. Yeah. We should continue to make it a real thing, right? Like, we as fans on the outside need to realize, okay, we're building towards something here. We're having a real tangible effect on the way these opponents are coming into this stadium and playing their game. That's the mindset we have to adopt. And so if we get this series at home, you mentioned, you know, some of these younger, inexperienced players, maybe there's something to that. You know, you can't always rattle rookies, but there's a better chance that the guys who are coming in their early and mid 20s who haven't faced an environment like that kind of get like, ooh, okay. Even if just for a second it enters the back of their mind, like, what did we hear all offseason, you know, from Turner and all the guys who were, you know, getting courted? People were watching the stadium on TV during the playoffs and were like, whoa, okay. Yeah. And they could see it through TV. Like, imagine being there. So I think it's a good point from a little more objective, you know, roster standpoint that the Reds have way less pitching that the Phillies would have to contend with. Arizona's like, they're not too far ahead, but they have a little bit better starting pitching situation.
Right. And when you're looking at this too, you're trying to whittle it down to like the top eight guys, right?
Yeah.
You know, like obviously the Reds don't have a ton of depth and they've churned through so many guys this year, but you're thinking about three game series. You're thinking, okay, let me take this team's eight best and see how it stacks.
Yeah, exactly. And Andrew Abbott got off to a fantastic start to his major league career, and he's come back to earth a little bit. Hunter Green's got a big fastball, but also doesn't have the best control. And that's, you know, the Phillies have been a little bit feast or famine with that type of pitcher. You have to figure that the way the lineup has been hitting, it has its flaws, but the way the Phillies lineup has been hitting lately, they've at least had multiple people hot at some point for the past, you know, 2 months, right? So you have to think if the pitching is a little bit less, even if you just have to lean on a couple guys, it looks good. I agree with you. I think the Reds are number four on this list.
One last thing. I just want to say, when you're trying to figure out matchups for the Phillies, I mean, right now they are sixth in the majors batting against righties, OPS, and they're seventh against lefties.
Consistency.
The 779 OPS against lefties and a 764 against righties. So they've been a little better against lefties. And in that series, hypothetically, if it's Abbott and Williamson, that's two lefties. They only have one lefty in their bullpen, Sam Moll. So it'd be harder for them to match up later innings, obviously with like the Schwarbers and Harpers of the world in the lineup. So yeah, this to me is the best matchup.
And the Reds have a potential to build like a fun story, kind of almost to be like the Phillies of last year where they have all these young guys. This could be their start to really break through in a national stage. They have the legendary anchor, the potential future Hall of Famer in Joey Votto coming along with. Like, there's some storyline stuff there. If you squint, you could see something going wrong in that, you know, taking over. But just on paper, it doesn't really look like the Reds would have the upper hand in a matchup like that.
Now, this is where it gets interesting because I think we're going to have different answers here as to what the next easiest matchup is.
Right. And for me, in initially thinking about this, it came down to, well, I don't want to spoil it too much, but it came down to just two of the three teams because I have a clear number one team that I think would be the toughest matchup for the Phillies. But in thinking about this next level, this next rung, I had to really sort of think about, you know, specters and demons and just the feeling during the regular season of not being able to play their best ball when facing these teams, either of these two teams, really. There's just something about the way they play these teams that's just, it's just hard to watch sometimes. But in actually taking a step back from that, thinking more about how things might actually go down in a playoff series, I would actually put the Marlins next. And I think I don't feel great about that, but it's almost like giving them a tiebreaker. I think we saw during the last series that the Phillies can obviously hang with this team, and their starting pitching situation outside of Eury Pérez, who's very good, prodigious at this point, I don't really know what's going on there with the starting pitching situation. Like, Jesus Luzardo is fine, but he's not going deep.
He's had a rough last few weeks too.
Edward Cabrera walks everybody.
Not a starter.
Yeah. Braxton Garrett is
he's probably starting
fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a lefty. I'm like, okay. The bullpen is good. But I just don't think that this team is strong enough to get through the Phillies. Which is weird because they lost the season series, right? So you're like, oh, well, no, they handled them. They beat them. Something about the way this team is constructed, you know, maybe they get Jorge Soler back in time. I don't really know what his situation is right now. I don't really love the Marlins offense. There's just something to me that I think if I'm really getting down into the nitty gritty of it, I'm looking at this Marlins team and thinking, okay, how would I get beat by this Marlins team? The answer is you really have bad batted ball luck, I think. just to really diminish it. And sorry to any Marlins fans who might happen to be listening. Welcome, but also sorry. I would rank them third. It's close. It's really close. And I think there are a couple of guys who could be problems and insert themselves as thorns in the side, a la Cody Ross for a couple of years. That potential is higher than with the Reds. But I would put them third. Do you disagree? Is this where we diverge after all? Or who do you have third?
Yeah, we are going to disagree here because I'm putting the Cubs here.
Really? Oh, yes. Oh, go for it. Okay.
I think the Cubs pitching has some major holes in it right now. And I mean, if you get them in a short series, you're looking at Justin Steele starting game one, and he's had a great year. He might finish runner up in the Cy Young. He is a guy the Phillies can hit left-handed. I think they can hit him. Kyle Hendricks would start game two, like not probably, he would start game two, Kyle Hendricks. And they've hit him in the past. I know they're both these guys are sort of crafty, right? But I just, the bigger thing to me is also the bullpen then. Huge holes. The last two nights against the Diamondbacks, they brought Marcus Stroman off the injured list, and then they made him a reliever, and he pitched back-to-back games for the first time in his life just after coming back from an injury. And that is because they really don't have a lot right now. I mean, like, Drew Smyly is one of their main setup men. Mark Leiter Jr., who's had a great season for them, is filling a huge role. Brad Boxberger, who's missed most of the season, he's like their top setup guy. There are some serious holes in this pitching right now. And, you know, maybe I'm looking at them in a snapshot now. They've lost four in a row. They've really gone through a rough stretch, and maybe I'm having some recency bias here. But I think this is a team that can be pitched to and also can be beaten on the mound. And so I've got them as the second best matchup for the Phillies. And then the Marlins would be next for me. So it's very close. The Marlins just scare me. I think Jake Berger and Josh Bell scare me because they can put one in the seats at any time. Luis Arraez, I know he hasn't hit, you know, he's not going to hit 400, obviously, but he's tough. He's given the Phillies problems. And some of these other guys, Brian De La Cruz, Jesus Sanchez, these guys have given the Phillies problems in the past. Yes, their pitching is a concern. I think they have one of the best closers in the game, Tanner Scott. He scares me. Their lefties, and Andrew Nardi, really good lefty in the bullpen. He scares me. Like, they can match up pretty well against the Phillies, I think, later in games. And that scares me a little more than the Cubs. So I think there's just a tiny advantage to the Marlins here over the Cubs. I think it's close. That batted ball luck, like you said, but I mean, in a three-game series, if you lose it, like, what do we, you know, you're going to look up and say, wow, how did the Phillies lose the series? And it's like, oh, the Marlins just got, like, they just put the ball in play and it landed. Yep. Like,
yeah, exactly.
That's how you lose a three-game series when you're the heavy favorite. So I think that's why I have the Marlins ahead of the Cubs in terms of difficulty right now. So right now I'm at Reds, Cubs, Marlins in terms of easiest to hardest.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. It is kind of an insane thing for me to essentially hinge a prediction on batted ball luck, I guess is what it sounded like. That's a little wild. That's not really what it's coming down to. But I do look at this Marlins team, and I can just picture a situation where, you know, Jacob Stallings, who was a pain in our side during that last Marlins series, just reaching at the bottom of the order, bringing Luis Arraez up in, you know, a non-contact situation, whereas as a fan of the pitching side, you know, maybe there's a guy on third with one out and you're trying to hope for, you know, something favorable there, and he comes up to the plate. You're like, oh boy, if there's a better chance of getting the ball in play, then yeah, you're probably in a little bit of trouble. And you can look into a crystal ball and see something like that happening. There aren't a lot of those guys up and down that lineup offensively. So if the Phillies are able to get ahead early in those two games, I would feel like they should be able to do well. Again, we've seen how this team fares in the regular season against the Marlins. Anything goes, no matter what things say on paper. But then we get, You know, I'm going to slightly walk back what I said because I thought I had.
No, stay convicted with your opinion.
Well, I'm looking ahead now. I'm leaving the Marlins where I had them. I'm looking ahead and thinking about, you know, I said I had a clear number one, and I think it's actually, it's a little bit closer than I was probably initially giving it credit for. In a couple of ways, I think the Cubs are interesting because they have an MVP talent who is playing up to his former self, basically, in Cody Bellinger. If you have star power, as we've seen, chances are you're setting yourself up for success in a short playoff series. They also have a couple other guys who have been through this sort of thing before. You look at Dansby Swanson, who's been through this dance a few times with the Atlanta Braves. You look at somebody like Yan Gomes, who you don't really think of being, you know, really battle tested necessarily, but he's appeared in 22 playoff games on his own. And we talk about the Reds having that inexperience. Well, look on the other side here, and the Cubs, especially in the offensive side, a little less so on the pitching side, but especially on the offensive side, they have some guys who might not necessarily be so rattled or so taken aback by the whole, you know, situation. It's a good lineup. It's a mostly healthy lineup right now. I think what leaves them in second place for me is that pitching situation. The relief is just, it's not as deep.
No.
If Alzolay is, you know, if he's really done for the year, that's a huge blow taking Fulmer's him out of the out. Equation.
Yeah.
Michael Fulmer is out. You know, my former Phillies great Mark Leiter Jr., to take nothing away from what he's been able to accomplish this year, he's had a really, really good year.
It's had a great year.
If he's the guy that you're really kind of worried about, then you're probably looking good in that matchup. Justin Steele is having a good year, but I don't think he's having a great year. I say that, of course, as he's going to get first place Cy Young Award votes. Something about his year just, it doesn't feel like you're walking in against 2008 CC Sabathia. It doesn't feel like you're coming up against something really formidable. He's absolutely got it in him to throw seven shutout innings for sure, but he doesn't have that terror to stay with the subjective feelings here, because that's really what we have to go on right now. It doesn't inspire the same kind of crap, we really need to steal one from this guy, or like it would really be an upset if we pulled this out. Like, it just doesn't feel that way. And then Stroman being in relief, Smiley being recently, you know, converted into relief again. I don't know. It's kind of a weird situation, but that's why I would leave them in second, just because of the uncertainty surrounding all that. And so then we agree that the toughest matchup, potentially a toughest matchup, would be the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it starts with the pitching at top, right? I mean, like, you get Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly at the top, two of the better starters in the National League, I think. You have not a lot behind that, though. I mean, no. Their bullpen is rough. They got Paul Sewald. Kevin Ginkles had a really good season. That's about it. And yeah. I, you know, their lineup is scary because it's just athlete after athlete. We saw it late last year, right? When the Phillies went to Arizona and we're like, whoa, this team, they were out of it, but they had caught up a lot of guys. And you're like, whoa, there's something about this team. Like, they do things that a lot of teams don't do. And now the rule changes have really played into their favor because they have a lot of athletes. They have speed. They put the ball in play. And so they have some pesky players. They have some real athletes in the outfield that can go get it. But that helps them more, I think, in Chase Field than it does on the road. And I think while this would be the toughest matchup, I still think this is a matchup that, you know, that the Phillies should probably win. And I think here's the best thing that's going in the Phillies' favor right now, Paul, is that we're talking about all these hypothetical, you know, pitching matchups.
Yeah.
If all these teams stay bunched together, they're going to have, you know, most likely to get into the playoffs, these teams are going to have to use their best pitchers that final weekend. And maybe Zach Gallen is pitching game 162 to just to get Arizona into the playoffs, and then will not be able to start game one of the wild card series. Like, that is the best thing going for the Phillies right now, is that none of these teams, all these teams are bunched together. And it's hard to imagine that someone's going to separate themselves. Maybe somebody does, but between now and the end of the season, but it seems like it might not happen. And that's a great thing for the Phillies, because you want those teams to have to use their guys just to get in.
It's 100% correct. And I think it's what I've leaned on the last few weeks, looking at this team and their positioning in the race. You know, people got worried at the end of the Braves series when the Braves took 3 of 4 in Philadelphia. And you're like, oh man, here we go. Like, it's always been this lingering thought in certain pockets of the fan base, where you can just kind of see it leak out every so often. They start getting tense. The shoulders get up a little bit. You're like, oh no, is it going to happen? Is it going to happen right now? They've shown little things where they're leaking oil with the pitching staff. And like, we've been over this. It doesn't look amazing right now. A lot of guys are tired. I get that. They're healthy for the most part, which is great and continues to be the critical thing. But there's so much around the Phillies that is bolstering their position right now and should help a lot of folks feel better about where they are. It's not just, you know, the 3.5 effective 4.5 game lead for the top spot right now. It's not just that. That in and of itself is great. But you look at these other teams and the situation that they are in, that the Phillies are separating themselves from. And it is exactly that. They need to keep playing all of their best guys with the pedal to the floor. Yeah. To get into the playoffs. Yeah. There is enough competition here. They're not simply going for seeding. There is enough competition here to even get into the playoffs or miss out entirely, that they need to keep going full bore. Maybe that does mean Zach Gallen goes in game 161 or 162. Maybe that means Justin Steele goes in game 161 or 162. Maybe that means Eury Pérez goes then for the Marlins. Like,
right. And what did we talk about all these teams? It's like you can see a one or two for most of these teams, but then you're like, boy, once you get beyond that first or second starter, it's kind of rough. And if you got to use that first or second starter in the last weekend, I mean, advantage Phillies. And let's be real here, Paul. I mean, we should acknowledge this. I mean, the Phillies are being greatly helped here by the fact that all these teams kind of stink.
Yes, like, absolutely.
The sixth seed last year, the Phillies were the sixth seed last year, and they had 87 wins, okay? Mm-hmm. Right now, the sixth seed is on pace for 84 wins.
That's
a 3-win. That is a big difference. That is a huge difference in quality from last year to this year. And so if it was a similar type of quality in the NL last year as it is this year, the Phillies would, you know, it'd be a much more different picture right now. So let's acknowledge it for what it is. I mean, they are being helped out by the fact that the rest of the league is just decidedly mediocre.
Yes. No, that's absolutely true. And the Phillies, for their part, are no juggernaut. We're talking as if, you know, I'm probably coming off to some people like, oh, what, you a fan of some unbeatable team in the playoffs here? No, of course not. But the Phillies, I think, are noticeably better than these other wild card contenders right now.
Well, what do we talk about? It's like the playoffs is a different type of baseball in the regular season. Mm-hmm. And once you whittle down your roster to your top 10 position players and your top 8 to 10 pitchers, the Phillies stack really well. Depth wise, like, have they had it all year? Not really, but they've had enough, and that's why they're going to get into the playoffs, and that's why they'll probably have the fourth seed, because they had enough depth, not great depth, but enough. Mm-hmm. But you start to whittle down the roster to your best, you know, 18 to 20 players, and the Phillies compare quite favorably there, I think. I do. And one last thing about Gallen. Uh-huh. Last year, a 4.15 ERA in 2 starts, 8 2/3 innings. And this year, he gave up 2 runs in 5 2/3 innings. But the Phillies have done okay against him in the past. Not to say that he's vulnerable against them, but they've done okay against him in the past.
Yeah, yeah. There's reason to take heart. And speaking of the top 8, 10 players or so, let's turn back to the Phillies for just a second here and assume things continue to go all, you know, happy path, blue sky. We can all hold hands and waltz through the field as the Phillies lock up the fourth seed, the top wild card spot. They host the best of three. Okay, great. We are now in this reality, and regardless of opponent, so opponent agnostic, if you will, let's think for a second about what the Phillies' Achilles heel might look like, because right now, I think it's fair to say that the starting rotation for the Phillies, as much as we were ragging on some of these other contenders, starting rotation for the Phillies isn't exactly looking like it's, you know, made out of platinum these days. You have to figure Zach Wheeler is your number one. He's pitching like a Cy Young Award candidate. I know the ERA is a little bit high and he didn't have a great start against the Braves. That probably takes him out of the dark horse running for the award, and I get that. He still had a fantastic year. He's your number one. And then what? Right? You know, we were just talking about, oh, okay, we see a number one on some of these other teams. There's talent in these names on the Phillies roster, but there is definite uncertainty about who goes where. So let's think about this, Matt. Zach Wheeler goes game one. Okay, fine, written. No argument there. Nobody's going to argue with that unless they have to use him in one of those other situations we were talking about for the rest of the competitors.
It would be very bad.
It would be very bad. But then what happens? Let's take a quick look here. We have Aaron Nola, who, as I think everybody in the world is aware at the moment, is underperforming and not having a great year. He was unable to finish the fifth inning in his last start. It's not great. You have Taijuan Walker, who is kind of an enigma still, months later after he first revealed himself to be something of an enigma. He can get through some innings and work through it. He's proven to be a bit of a horse, but that usually only amounts to about six regular season innings, and that leash would probably be shorter in the playoffs. And it's been kind of dicey most of the way. Not a lot of swing and miss, a lot of walks. Interesting. Chris Sanchez has been one of the most reliable guys in the rotation lately, but how much do you trust him in the playoffs? Ranger Suarez, a guy you could probably figure is a contender for one of these spots, but sometimes has more utility and value in a relief role in the playoffs, as we saw last year. So, Matt, let's open this up a little bit. What do we think the rotation for this team looks like, assuming they can go with Wheeler in game one of a series, and then take it from there? What does this landscape look like to you?
I mean, I don't even think there's a debate about the second spot, and people are going to get angry about this, but it has to be Nola. It is Nola. Like, it's nobody else. It's Aaron Nola. But I do think that you saw a blueprint over the weekend for how they might handle Aaron Nola in the postseason, and that was in the Cardinals game, they had the bullpen going in the fourth inning.
Yep.
He got into a little bit of trouble. They cranked Matt Strom up, and I mean, that's almost like, you know, whatever you think of Aaron Nola, it was a little jarring in a regular season game to see them, and he hadn't given up very many runs yet, to have them have bullpen action going in the fourth inning of an Aaron Nola start. And that indicated to me that this is how they're going to treat him, I think, moving forward. I mean, even though it's Aaron Nola, I think his leash has shortened significantly. So yes, he starts the second game of a playoff series. Yes, he's going to be treated differently, I think, than he has in the past, until proven otherwise. I think there's a lot of concerning things right now regarding him. I'm not blind to that. 12 swing strikes in his last two starts. You know, August 27th against the Cardinals. Seven innings, one hit, no runs. He had 12 swing strikes in that game. That start alone. So he's now had three straight starts where he hasn't gotten to the fifth inning, through the fifth inning. A lot of concerns here. He's got another start Wednesday afternoon against the Braves. Big start for him. That game really doesn't matter at all to the Braves. That game matters a lot to Aaron Nola.
Yes, it does.
And I still think he's the guy no matter what. I do. Like, you have to take a bet on, you know, who he's been. And I know that sounds crazy to some people, but I see him as their second best option still. And I would be hard pressed to think of a scenario in which he does not start a game two for them. When it comes down to Walker and Suarez, a lot of the stuff that we kind of ding Walker for, I would ding Suarez for right now. His strike throwing has not been solid. It has not been Ranger Suarez like. I mean, they have very similar walk rates right now.
They do.
Taijuan Walker's got like a 10% walk rate, and Ranger somewhere in the nines. Kind of a coin flip there, I think. You know, and if it's game three of the wild card series, like obviously, like whoever starts that game is probably not going to go deep unless he's pitching well, right? I mean, he's got a very short leash. It's an all hands on deck type, you know, situation. You know, maybe there's an opener of some sorts, depending on who you're facing. And then one of them comes in after that. I don't know. Basically, everything would be on the table there. I think Walker is probably my guy because it allows you to use Suarez in different spots. But I could be convinced otherwise. And Christopher Sanchez, I would not start him in a playoff game. I don't know what you do with him. I'm open to suggestions. I don't know what to think about him. I don't know what to do. Because I just don't. There's a lot of home runs. That concerns me. You know what I'm really interested to see, Paul? To see his start on Tuesday. And I know it might be a little truncated because they're going to do this piggyback thing, although it may not be truncated totally.
With Lorenzen, right?
Yeah. I want to see how the Braves hitters see his changeup the second time. This would be Sanchez's second straight start against the Braves.
Okay.
His last start against the Braves, the changeup was phenomenal. And I know he gave up four runs, and two of them were on a fastball that he shouldn't have thrown to Austin Riley. But they could not pick up the changeup. I want to see how they swing at the changeup this second time, because that's going to tell us a lot about Christopher Sanchez. It's going to tell us, is that changeup like sort of a gimmicky thing where it's like if you haven't seen it before, you really have trouble seeing it and picking it up and you really don't have a shot? Or is it a legit changeup that, you know, because of the arm action, because of the speed difference between his fastball, it's just a really tough pitch to see no matter what, no matter if you've seen it before. I think this start is going to tell us a ton about how they're going to use Chris Sanchez in the playoffs. And I don't know.
The thing I can see with Chris Sanchez, I agree that he doesn't start in the wild card series, and I have a hard time seeing him even in the Syndergaard role necessarily until the NLCS, at least if they get there.
Agreed.
At that
really
point,
you need four starters really,
right,
for the playoffs. And they did use the fifth guy Falter at one point, but really you need four starters.
Yeah, and I was there at that game that ended up being one of the most legendary games ever. So that's good. That's good precedent there. So NLCS game four. I agree that in no fault of his own, and this is not a penalty, that Ranger having that flexibility to move to the pen is actually an asset here, but it would prevent him from being a starter in this case. And I do think that does make it interesting when you have to, you know, then of course probably throw Taiwan Walker. I can envision a way where Sanchez, if the Phillies advance to the division series and play the Braves, where Sanchez could be a guy for like the wraparound part of the hypothetical Braves order with like Eddie Rosario on into Michael Harris, maybe a righty in the middle there, depending on who's starting. I don't see him being a long guy unless something went terribly wrong and he has to sop up innings. There isn't really a clear role for him right now. That isn't to say he hasn't outpitched Taiwan Walker at points, multiple points lately. I do think the home runs are a concern, especially with the Braves when all they do is, you know, hit a home run every other time somebody steps to the plate. It's hard to fit some of these guys into roles, I think is what it comes down to, because we talk about in a short series only needing a couple of starters. You don't consider Chris Sanchez to be one of your top two right now. You don't consider Taiwan Walker to be one of your top two right now. I mean, maybe you consider Chris Sanchez to be one of your top two. I don't know if I go that far.
I don't know
if I go that far.
Yeah.
No. Zach Wheeler's
not to diminish. Again, not to diminish what Sanchez has done, but no. You just know.
I agree that we're still at a point where we have enough leash of past performance, and we're going back, you know, seasons at this point, to think of Aaron Nola as the number two, right? He hasn't totally exhausted that. Yes, this season has been bad, but we have seen what he is at his peak. And it is not yet reasonable to think all of his best days are completely behind him. We're not at that point yet. I think if things, wherever team he ends up playing with, if he comes back to the Phillies, different discussion. If he starts out next season looking kind of rough, well, then okay, then the discussion get a little bit louder. But as far as this year's playoffs are concerned, yes, I think Nola is the guy for your second game. with that short leash. And yes, it was jarring, but I do think it was prep. It sure seemed like prep. You don't normally get somebody up in the fourth inning in a Nola start, even if he's, you know, if he's only let up a couple of runs to that point. No, you're letting him go. And we've seen him, you know, work through it, maybe give up four runs by the end of it, but then eventually pitch, you know, into the sixth, maybe even a little bit beyond. Like he has done that. To have somebody up in the fourth, that was a premonition. It really was. I think the leash is just going to be short, and that's what we're going to have to deal with. Then maybe one of those other guys comes in behind. Maybe Suarez turns into a bulk guy in that start. I don't really know. The fact that Ranger can be put in these different positions, again, it's an asset here. It's valuable. It's important in case Nola does flame out. He could be that next guy up on that short leash.
If one of the guys behind him was pitching really, really well, I think you could make an argument for them, one of those guys, to supplant Nola as your two. I just don't see it in Suarez right now. I don't, not yet. And I know that the ERA has been okay since he's, you know, three starts since he's come back from the IL, a 3.31 ERA in 16 innings, you know, 20 strikeouts, but nine walks, two homers, a really low batting average on balls in play. He's been a little lucky, honestly. It's just not enough to push him over Nola for me.
No,
and maybe
it's
it is
not
for some people, but I'm saying for the Phillies, I don't think it is. I don't think it's even close, really. Like, Nola's starting the second game.
Rangers' year has really not... I don't really know how much I trust Ranger right now, because I am a little bit concerned with the walks, and him in particular with the walks. You know, this is a guy who came up as a reputation of a control artist, and he sort of shed that the more he pitched in the major leagues. But it's still always a bit of a red flag to me every time Ranger crosses the three walk in a start threshold. That's usually what I set in my mind for him. I feel like if he keeps the walks under three, whatever the start is, if he's hitting the strike zone enough, he's getting guys to chase some of his off-speed and breaking stuff down and out of the zone, they're not laying off it and picking it up, then he's doing okay. But these last couple starts where he's been walking three guys, four guys, he's gotten out of it a couple of times, which is great, but escape artistry, you know, that high wire gets a little bit thinner in the playoffs. And I don't know if this version of Ranger that we've seen the last couple of weeks, and since he's come back from the injury list, which could still be playing a part, don't want to speculate, but it could. I mean, it's out there. He's only made three starts since coming back.
Did throw 106 pitches last night.
He did. And that's, you know, but that was a season high, right? Let me look at it. Yes. Yeah, that was a season high by one pitch. And that's good, you know, that he had the gas to make it through. It's good that he got those 18 outs. Something just doesn't quite feel right. You know what it's like? It's like Sir Anthony before this month. You could see that Dominguez was kind of working his way out of some ugly innings. And then this month it's been like, ooh.
Yeah.
Like not good. Like,
lost two have been good. The game Friday night is outing Friday night. I thought that might have been a little springboard, but we'll see. I mean, like, because we keep thinking there's moments where you're like, oh, like maybe he's got something. But yeah, I thought his last two have been better. I mean, I don't know. Don't really know what to make of him. When you were saying that wraparound role, like for Sanchez against the bottom of the Braves order or whatever, like that's Strom though to me. To me, like Strom is, would you rather have Strom or Sanchez doing that?
Well, yeah, Strom is probably the guy. So really it even further reduces the lens there to Sanchez being in some ungodly early inning, maybe picking that up. So yeah, and that's an unlikely
Strom to me
scenario.
Is your fireman. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was the one who got up for Nola on Friday night. And yeah, I look at them when you whittle down the pitching staff. I know there's a lot of questions, but I think there's like an immense amount of upside. And I don't think you can say that about a lot of NL pitching staffs right now.
Yeah. You know, I think we're doing a good job, at least as best we can, of trying to be equal.
There's holes. You can poke holes in this. Like, it's crazy too. And we're doing that. And like, I think, I think you can poke a lot of holes in this Philly staff right now. And I also think that you whittle it down, you get into a short series, and all of a sudden you can see them having success and fitting into different, you know, very specific and successful roles.
So I think really what remains to be seen now is looking ahead. The next time Nola gets the ball, the next time Ranger gets the ball, the next time Chris Sanchez gets the ball, depending on the situation, depending on the standings, maybe there's a little more padding between the Phillies and the Cubs or whoever's second at that time where they can experiment a little bit more. It's still a little soon. That's probably at the moment something that only happens in final week of the season.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to watch this next turn through the rotation, how things go with just about everybody. You know, how does Wheeler bounce back from kind of a rough outing against the Braves? How do, you know, Nola, Walker, Ranger, and Chris Sanchez all, you know, perform? Because they're, in a way, auditioning for their roles in this short playoff series. So I think if there's one thing to really keep an eye on, the offense has been pretty steady, all told, as a unit lately. I know they've had some frustrating runners in scoring position shenanigans going on lately, but that's fine. For the most part, they're not.
Rojas is playing more.
Hey, man. We need to talk about the center field situation later.
I mean, I think they figured it out.
they might.
I mean, just for the rest of the season. I mean, like I'm talking. Yeah, about, I'm not talking right. about the out, but I mean, I think they figured it out. I mean, I don't know that it was like. Yeah, I don't know what might have sparked it, but anyway, I think they figured it out. I mean, like, no matter what Johan Rojas does at the plate, and if you have to pinch it for him late in the game because you're down, then you have to. But no matter what he does at the plate, he is the one who should be playing every day right now.
So on we trudge. Again, just to set the table, Phillies, 81-67, 14 games over 500, 90 wins, still in sight. They need to go 9-5, but they can do it. They can do it. Matt, they can do it.
88. Well, if they go 7-7, they get to 88?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess that's where they're going to get. I'm going to give them 88.
I just spent 30 minutes talking about how concerned I am about the pitching staff. I need to end it on a high note. I'm still rooting for the 90, man. I want the 90.
It's right there. I mean, they're going to face some bad pitching in the last 10 games.
Yeah. It would be nice if the Braves rolled over like they did for the Marlins so far in that series.
Might not see Acuna. He's got a calf thing.
Leg discomfort. Yeah, he left the game. Anyway. The Phillies are still in good position. And if you're out there and worried about this team, you have some legit concerns. And we just talked about them. The starting pitching looks a little iffy at times. The bullpen has been tired, but there's talent there. The offense looks good, although they're having a little bit of trouble with runners in scoring position. Okay. You could probably apply a lot of those same problems to an extra degree to a lot of the teams that are trying to chase the Phillies right now. And the Phillies are in the catbird seat. They have the multi-game lead with tiebreakers on a few of these teams. They're fine. You don't need to worry about this team yet. There's still a while to go before you need to pull that cord. So just try and enjoy this a little bit. Save up your nerves. Save your gray hairs for when they're actually in the playoffs and things really get stressful. Because as we all saw last year, it gets pretty stressful. Save your energy. So the Phillies are looking good. Matt, is it too much to hope that we get a third straight week of an incredible tease for another great story? Because, you know, with the Hoskins and the Hoffman stories the last couple of weeks, you've been on a major heater, which is saying something for you because you're always cranking out great stuff. What do we got? Do we have a third straight week here? Drum roll?
No, I guess there's a couple things I've been pulling strings on, but I don't know. I'll be in Atlanta. And then, yeah, 7 at home and then 3 in New York to finish. So I'll be with the team the rest of the way. And we shall see.
Yes, we will be back with you again early next week as the stretch run starts to wrap up. And hopefully things are as good as they are right now. The Phillies, 90 wins are in sight. Come on, boys. I know you can do it. Get me to 90. But they have to actually clinch a spot first, then we can worry about cherries on top of the sundae. So, as always, thank you to Matt. Go read his stuff at theathletic.com. Thank you to our folks at Phillies Nation for helping to get the word out, philliesnation.com. For Matt and for all of you out there, my name is Paul. Enjoy the rest of this series against the Cardinals. Try not to watch too much of the Braves series if you can help it, because we all know how those go. And then get ready for the stretch run of the regular season. Playoff time is approaching. It's so close. Get excited. Not too excited. Get excited. We'll catch you next week. Take care.